A lot of people think that Pulse was just another nightclub. And it was just another nightclub in some respects, as is every queer space we go into. It's just another place. But that doesn't stop it from also being the wonderful place where I met some of the best people I've ever met in my entire life.
Hello. Hello. I keep trying to do the intro of this week's show and sound upbeat and sound excited, but I've not really managed to do it because it's a bit of a heavy show this week, and I don't really want to give you the impression that everything's bubbly and then lead you into the episode when everything isn't bubbly. Let me give you a bit of background. So I am going to assume that if you are listening to this show, if you have subscribed to Lost Spaces, if you're listening to this particular episode, that you are interested in queer history and that you are familiar with the Pulse nightclub shooting that happened in Orlando in 2016. And I'm also going to assume that you have heard some or most or all of the stories from survivors and from the families of victims about the impact of that night and how it changed their world. Anyway, now that we're a few years further on and people's attention and focus has moved elsewhere, there's a question that lingers. What happens to those feelings that are sitting there for the people that were impacted by that night? And what if Pulse was your safe space? How do you move on whilst also never forgetting the importance of having access to that bar? Well, for actor, writer J.J. Ivey, who religiously turned up to Pulse every Tuesday night for karaoke night, there are a mix of emotions, and some of those are not resolved. What I appreciated most about this week's conversation is that JJ was really open with me about some of the messiness of their emotions and how they are still, all these years later, continuing to make sense of something that is just never going to make sense. Okay, so I hope that explains why I couldn't really properly do my cheesy intro. Let's get into the episode.
So I was transitioning from being that mean gay who would just say mean things to people about people, because I was trying to not be called out myself, because, well, I've always been plus size, so it's an easy insult for someone to call me fat. And if I insulted someone else first before they got a chance to, well, they weren't going to be able to hurt me. But being there in that environment, come to learn, those aren't funny, and everyone has the option, if someone's treating you like that or talking to you like that, to just walk away. And that's kind of what we did there. If someone just wasn't funny or being cruel to you for no reason, you're just like, okay, I'm going to go have fun somewhere else. Mm-hmm. You can deal with your anger and whatever else aggression is right here. I'm going to be over there having a good ass time, and you can suffer.
But are you saying that this was the first place where you were not surrounded by sassy, bitchy gays?
Kinda, yeah. And it wasn't immediate either. It wasn't within the first hour of me being there. I felt welcomed as soon as I walked in the first time, but this kind of noticing that being a mean, sassy gay was not really welcome in that place was very gradual. Like, and I probably started shifting myself before I notice what I was doing, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I still read people, but my reading people started coming from funny places and out of love and not out of fear. And it helped that while I was there, I got a great new group of friends. We even had a little name for ourselves. We called ourselves the House of Misfits.
Aww.
Because we were all, well, we didn't really exist in a main clique or anything. We just kind of came together from different walks of life and ended up meeting each other at this bar and having fun with each other, falling in love with each other in more ways than one. Yes, we were completely incestuous in that family.
Brilliant.
But it was a good group of friends where if we were insulting each other, it's because we realized we loved each other.
Mm.
And I think that was really gradual too. I think we loved each other before we realized we did.
Mm. So this is a group of friends that you met through karaoke and that you went out with every Tuesday night for karaoke.
Yeah, I started meeting up with them every week. And the friend group grew bigger, grew smaller, depending on who was around. Yeah. But it was really a conglomeration of all kinds of different people that I wouldn't have hung out with outside of this bar. Mm-hmm. I never would have gotten a chance to. And before in my life, I had theater friends, and a lot of them are queer, but most of the friend groups I've been in I've been one of three or four queer people out of 10 or more.
Mm.
So this was really my first time being with a bunch of homos.
Mm.
And I loved it.
There's something, so I need to admit something to you now. I don't think I've ever been part of a group of friends.
Really?
Yeah. Let me just think this through before I say that definitively. Maybe. No, yeah. No, I'm going to go on the record and say I've never, ever felt or been a part of a group of friends. And it just seems fascinating to me. I guess because of all of those interpersonal dynamics and the fact that everyone's fucking each other. But I think I'm too sensitive. And I think as soon as one person falls out with another person, I'll feel like I have to choose sides, or it'll just get messy, or mm-hmm. it'll get complicated. And I feel too much from everyone that's in that group. And so I have to just disengage. Or they don't like me and they stop right. inviting me out.
I think it's one of those things where it really just happens by accident too.
Unless you start dating someone and then you join their friend
right.
group, which is just not that's just not the thing. That shouldn't happen. You should just be sorry, I like your friends, but I don't want to hang out with you.
That's happened to me recently where someone was dating and we had a big group of friends and then they broke up and we split off into two smaller groups of friends.
Oh God. Yeah. See, this is what this is just too fraught for me. It's just too dramatic.
And even this House of Misfits, I was so close to them back then and I love them and care for each and every one of them now, but we also have all grown apart.
Mm-hmm.
We talk to each other every once in a while.
That's so sad.
A couple have gotten married off into another group. Some of us have moved away, like myself. A couple of people have passed away over the years. And yeah, without everyone together, you still love them and look back on them with fondness. But it's important to remember that everything in life is only for right now. Mm. I don't believe that there's anything actually permanent in life.
Feels like you're going to break into a musical song right now.
As much as I love to sing, I wish I were musically inclined enough to come up with a number right on the spot.
Okay. But this is the thing that's most magical about groups and group dynamics is because it is so temporary and it is there's no way for me saying this other than it is the sum of the parts, right? All the different mm-hmm. individuals combining and the energy and the dynamics that exist there can be just so electric and propulsive.
I think electric and repulsive.
I said propulsive, but I mean repulsive too. Yeah.
Electric and repulsive also works great because it almost feels like an atom, like we're all held together. And you've got all these electrons moving around, but if one electron were to go to another atom, you wouldn't be the same. You'd be a completely different element.
But it's intoxicating as well, like wanting to be part. Like
yeah.
We are human beings who our cave people ancestors, I'm going to go like junk science here, so just go with me. Our cave people ancestors were all in tribes. That's how we survived. And so our brains think that's what we should be doing. And so it's really intoxicating to want to be around groups of people. But it's also terrifying for me. But like, this isn't about me. This is about you. This is about the group of people that you talk to at Pulse. Magic. They were magic for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes I really miss what we had. But I also know that all of us are in better places in our lives right now. Mm. So I can't be too mad about us separating.
But that's one of the other things, right? So when your life is the absolute worst, when everything's shit and like you're not having fun with anything and your job is shit or mundane and your love life's shit, going and hanging out with a group of people and going to the club and hanging out with a group of people is so much more significant and important, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't know how I would have made it through my minimum wage working in a theme park with people yelling at me all the time job without that group of people. We had a couple of servers in the group, some flight attendants, and we're all like, we hate our lives except for when we're right here together. And even outside of the club, because that's part of what made it a friend group, is we started hanging out other times too. Mm. Like one of my good sisters in the group, his name was Dizzy. He and I decided we were going to do drag together because they had an amateur talent night on Tuesdays there too. And we became sisters because we learned how to do our own makeup from each other. And I was never very good at it, but Dizzy got really, really good at it.
And so were you like drawn to drag or was it just like, I'll do it if you're doing it. Cool.
Well, as much as I love being in that group of people, I still felt incredibly introverted around others. And so I started doing drag just for fun with Dizzy after it attempting it a few times way before in my life. But I realized the first night I went out in drag, I could be a completely different person who wasn't shy, who wasn't nervous to talk to everyone. So it's like I put on this completely different character. And I love that. I probably could have gotten good at it had I been willing to put in more time and money to it, because drag is expensive.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I find it so annoying when I'm not immediately good at things.
Exactly.
like, why is this not completely natural?
Right. Mm. I did it for a while, but I couldn't afford to do more than buy Goodwill outfits. And I was always getting the cheapest makeup and the cheapest wigs. But I had a lot of fun doing it. And it definitely helped me figure out who I was as a person. I'm non-binary, but I didn't actually figure that out and come up with a name for it until 2021. So it was a long journey from there to now. But now looking back, I can see why I really enjoyed being in drag so much. Like all the pieces were there to begin with. I just didn't put the puzzle together.
So what was it like then being in 2021, like non-binary?
Well, I was working at this bar called The Cauldron where we got to like play a character and act like witches.
Oh.
And I remember I had bought like a little kind of dress-ish outfit to wear for a class in school. I did a scene where I played the fairy queen Titania in Midsummer Night's Dream. And that was really my first time playing a role where I'm like, I'm going to do a drag role in school and it's going to be great. And I liked how I looked so much in it, even without like a wig and makeup on. And then I remembered, oh, our dress code at work is wear whatever you want as long as it's witchy. So that day I decided to put on a little bit of makeup, but not go heavy drag makeup. And I wore that outfit And I felt so good when I looked at myself in the mirror, just wearing that, not as a drag queen, not as my name was Erica Fury, not as Erica Fury, but as JJ looking at the mirror, wearing that, I suddenly felt so complete. My roommate grabbed pictures of me in it that day. And like anytime I'm having a bad day, I can look at those pictures and see the amount of joy that's like pouring out of my face then. And that's when it clicked. I'm like, oh, I'm non-binary. And for some people, everyone is a bit different who's non-gender conforming or non-binary. Some people are like, I'm non-binary because I want nothing to do with gender. And I realize that I'm non-binary because I want all of the gender. Because I enjoy being male and I like dressing up butch and looking like a rugged lumberjack sometime. I mean, I got on plaid right now.
You don't look like a rugged lumberjack, I'm sorry to say.
Only because I recently shaved my face for a show.
Okay. Otherwise,
but listen, yes. When I got the beard. But I love being able to switch back and forth and sometimes be somewhere in between. I'm like, I'll mix and match boy clothes and girl clothes and have this beautiful creation that I can say is completely myself and completely my own. Hmm. And it's nice.
And so had you been aware of I'm assuming that you had been aware of the term non-binary before you realized that you were non-binary?
I had only lightly been aware of the term.
Okay.
Back pre-2016, when I was going to Pulse, like I never had a word for it then. And all the people I knew a bunch of drag queens that sometimes went out in the day in drag. And I knew some trans people. I knew some trans mass people. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends from Pulse was actually a trans femme woman who I remember having a drunken, deep conversation with Pulse at Pulse about, where I talked to her about how I loved being in drag. And sometimes I wish I could be like that during the day, but be able to switch back. And she told me that she remembered feeling similar to that, except she wanted to be in drag all the time. Mm-hmm. And then realized, wait, I'm not a drag queen, I'm a woman. And then she started living her life fully as a woman and still is. And I didn't have the term for it then because I'm like, I want to be somewhere in between. And I didn't really know what that meant then. It's like, do I want to be a drag queen like you see in Tu Wong Fu where they stay that way all the time? I'm like, no, I like being butch sometimes too. Or as butch as I can be. But.
I'm sorry that I threw shade at your butch credentials. I'm not one to talk.
That is totally fine. I'm totally that person that'll be like, hey, how you doing? What's up? Oh my God, did I do it? Do I sound butch? But later on, coming to New York, I started to meet more people who were non-binary mm-hmm. and get a better idea of it. And somehow working up at the Cauldron with all these witchy people, I don't know how management ended up doing it. They didn't do it on purpose, but they hired a bunch of queer people. I guess we were just the best for the job.
Yeah, well, like when someone sees a job ad that's like wanted someone to play a witch and walk around cauldrons, like who's going to respond to that ad?
Right, that's fair. And a lot of the people I was working with there are trans, and some of them, like there's one person there who is a trans mask, yet still wore a lot of femme clothing and makeup. And when I first met them, I didn't really get it, but after talking to them, I learned a hell of a lot more. And after I decided to go to work that one day in that outfit, I remember being so happy, and I talked to my friend there who was a trans man. I'm like, I thought that maybe I was fully cis because I've never experienced dysmorphia with my body that was gender related. I have like body related weight wise, but never because of my gender. But I feel so amazing like this. Is this something that's non-binary? And he told me, he's like, that's actually a pretty transphobic speaking point that you can only be under the trans umbrella if you have dysphoria, if you hate yourself at some point. And I hadn't even thought about it. I was like, there's more to that than dysphoria. There's euphoria too. What makes you feel the best? What makes you feel like you're the best person you've ever been? And for me, it was experiencing that gender euphoria of being somewhere in between. Yeah, I've learned a lot over the years. I'm like, I'm 35 now, and I can't believe it took me until like 31 or 32 to figure that out. And it was a pretty amazing realization, because at that moment, all the puzzle pieces fell into place. Like, I saw the pieces come together. I'm like, oh my God, I should have figured this out years ago, but I didn't have the language for it years ago.
And so sorry, I just took us down a line of questioning that had nothing to do with Pulse. Although it did have something to do with Pulse, because
it did.
It was where you first got to like properly explore gender and fuck with gender.
Exactly. It put me on that path. Or I guess if I've been on that path all my life, it
accelerated.
Gave me a turn in the right direction, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you see your path that's your life, and there's all these ways branching off of it, and I could have gone a different way completely, but...
To the lumberjack convention.
Exactly. Oh, God, could you imagine? I could be like a log cabin Republican or something right now.
So eventually you left Orlando in 2015.
Right.
And then in 2016, something pretty horrible and horrendous happened. And that's an understatement. I don't know why I was so tempered with my words. When the massacre happened at Pulse, how did you find out that that had happened? And what were your immediate thoughts?
I'm pretty sure I'm going to remember exactly where I was and what I was doing until the day I die. But I had moved to Pensacola in December of 2015, so I hadn't been gone that long. And I was out at another gay club that I really enjoyed. It was the only actual gay club in Pensacola, called Emerald City. I was there with some new friends, and I was quite drunk. And I remember my friend went to the restroom, and I was sitting there. I opened up my phone. I was scrolling through Facebook, and I saw a post from the Pulse Orlando Facebook page that said, "Get out of Pulse and keep running," or something like that. I might be misquoting it, but I remember seeing that and thinking, what the hell happened? And then I start seeing other like updates from friends on Facebook. This is back when Facebook was actually usable to see things in real time. And a lot of it was posting about, hey, there's someone's got a gun in the club. And it was a lot of confusion because no one knew what was going on. So I started texting my friends. It wasn't a Tuesday night, so I know that is not the night I normally would have been there, but a lot of them still went out. So I remember texting Randy and Will and so many people, just making sure that they were safe. And sometimes I think maybe that was was selfish to text every single person you know to make sure they were safe when there's so many other people you know weren't. And I don't know why I think like that. It's not useful at all to think like that, but...
But why do you... I know you've just said you don't know why, but why?
Yeah.
Why is it selfish?
I feel the same way when people tell me, like, especially that night or near that night, people will say, oh, I thank God that you weren't there that night. And maybe saying that itself isn't that selfish, but the thought of the like inverse of saying that is almost like saying, I'm so glad that someone else was there instead of you. I'm so glad that someone else got shot and you didn't. And I know that's not what people mean when they say that, but it's still there in the back of my head. Even if I were still living in town, I wouldn't have been there that night. But if I were there, maybe someone else would be alive.
Yes.
Well, that took me to a dark place I did not mean to go to. Shit, sorry.
But in the example that you've given, you've said that it has felt selfish to message people that you knew to ask if they were okay, knowing that other people were not. But if you didn't know those other people, you're not going to be able to message them anyway. So why does it make it selfish?
I don't know. Why does the mind think anything like that? That's a whole conversation that I think I've had with my therapist before that goes back to being super religious. And just to briefly get into it, because that would take hours upon hours to unpack. But the short version of it is I grew up with this thing that I was taught was a sin for so long that later on in life, it's still hard to believe that I deserve to live and deserve to be happy because somewhere way in the back of my head, it was so drilled in that you're a sinner and you don't deserve things that anytime something like this comes up, I'm like, I deserve to be the one that died. I don't deserve to be here at all, which is not something I fully believe, but it is always there at the back of my mind. And I haven't ever been able to get rid of it, but I have been able to unpack it and recognize it for what it is when it does show up. That's really the best you can do at times, right?
Yeah, but I get it. It's that voice that's like here on the back of your neck, like just behind your ear, right?
Well, you know the exact place and everything.
Yeah, mine is persistent.
But I do remember that night I did not go to sleep. I immediately sobered up and I went and stayed at my new friend's place, and at some point he went to sleep and I was just up the entire time sitting there staring at my phone, texting with people, calling people. My friend Dizzy, Lord bless them, but they had gone home and passed out that night and didn't answer their phone. So our entire friend group was freaking out the entire night trying to find Dizzy because we didn't know if he was there or not because he had said that he was going to go out that night and ended up not going, but there was a really good chance that he could have been in that building. And we finally figured out at like 8 that morning because one of our other friends literally drove over to his apartment and banged on the door until he woke up and answered the door. And then there were other friends we knew that were there that night that it took forever to hear from, like one of my drag queen friends that I wasn't even that close with, but you know, you have acquaintances you care about too. No one heard for them for days. And it's only because they had dropped their phone on their way out and had went to stay with someone because they were freaking out so much. They were fine. They got out. They just didn't have their phone. So there was a lot of that going around, not just people that I knew, but like friends of friends that were trying to figure out who was there. And it was days before we got the full list of everyone who had been a victim in there. And of course, all of a sudden, there were theories springing up everywhere. People said they knew who the shooter was. People said they knew this, they knew that. All kinds of misinformation going around. Some people were being told they were there and they weren't. Some people we were told were safe were in that body count. And it was a chaotic couple weeks there.
And what was it like in those days when you didn't know what was going on and you had to just be patient and there was nothing you could do but wait?
I mean, it was kind of agonizing. I remember I was working a serving job at the time and my manager called me before I could call her because I'm like, I can't work. She called me. He's like, I saw what happened. Just know that our hearts are with you. We love you. Do you need to take a few days off? And I was like, yes, yes, I do. And I was living with my mom at the time, and I remember I came back the day after because I had been with a friend. I walked in, and she just hugged me and held me for like, it had to have been like 10 minutes, not saying anything, just holding each other, crying, and like She knew how much that place meant to me and the people there meant to me. She had even been there herself a few times. Like, I took her out there for lesbian night a couple times. And it was so agonizing not knowing what was going on. And not just that, losing that sense of safety, because that's where family night was. Mm-hmm. I had never felt unsafe in a gay bar, for that matter, not just Pulse, but any gay bar up until that point. And the first, I do remember, I think that was a Saturday night, that Sunday night, the Tonys came on. And I'm like, theater, that's my life. Of course, I'm going to watch the Tonys. And everyone was wearing a ribbon for Pulse. And like, they changed up performances, like Hamilton was performing. And they did it without any of the guns that were in that number. And everyone was talking about it. And I'm getting worked up talking about it. I'm sorry.
Do you need to stop?
No, I think I'm going to take a deep breath and I think I'm good. I think it was amazing to get all that support from all over the country. Like, it wasn't support for me. It was support for the people there. And that was beautifully felt, I think, by not just the people who called that their home club, but like the entire queer community, at least of the U.S. I don't know how it was everywhere else, but it felt like we had all collectively lost this one space where we could be ourselves. Like, working our regular jobs, most places, you bottle it up. If you're working with the customer that's saying bigoted comments, usually you just smile and be like, okay, and you just stand there and take it. But in gay bars and places like Pulse, you didn't have to take that. Mm. You got to just fully be yourself and not worry about some jackass coming in and telling you you were going to hell for it. You didn't have to be on the defensive all the time. And there was a little while after that where any bar or club I went to, you weren't safe there anymore. And to this day, I still do this when I go into someplace new. As soon as I walk in a building, I look around me to see where all the exits are. I don't do it as much as when this first happened, but there was a while there, anytime I walked into a space, I was searching for all the exits as well as what is movable, what is strong, that if you need to jump behind something, what can block a bullet? And that, those first few weeks was, it felt so insane because it's agonizing. You don't know who was there. Not everyone you know has checked in yet. And then while it was great getting all that support, like on the Tonys and everything, it also felt kind of terrible when people would message you that you know you're their only gay friend they have, and they're texting you like, hey, saw what happened. Just want to send you my love. I'm like, I haven't heard from you in 5 years, and now is when you're texting me. And then there was also the frustration of suddenly becoming the representative for all the people in that area. Cause like, I wasn't there. That's not the night I usually went there, but like people I knew in the Pensacola area would be like, hey, do you want to talk about it? Let's talk about this. And I've talked about it since and tried to impact some of this, but this might be a dumb thing to think, but like after 9/11 happened, the entire United States was like, this impacts all of us. This is all of our tragedy. But then if you talk to people from New York around that time, they were like, I don't understand. You weren't New Yorkers. This is our backyard. This is happening to us. Mm. Why are you acting like this is happening to you? It's happening to us, not you. And I felt that way about Pulse. And sometimes I still do. Because I'm like, I understand the bigger picture of it. Like, this represented everyone's like home, queer space, their safe space. But also, you never went there. This wasn't your bar. Mm. This is our space. We get to grieve it. You don't get to tell us how to grieve or do all these things
Like, are you saying that the wider queer community has co-opted that grief?
Part of me wants to say that, but I know that's not the case. That's just the weird way my brain thinks about it sometimes. Mm.
No, no, and I totally, I like it. If you are saying that, I totally appreciate why you would feel that way.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say that because no one can own a tragedy.
Mm.
What happened at Pulse doesn't just belong to the people that went to Pulse or the people who worked there, performed there. But sometimes it's hard to be told by other people, oh, we feel what you feel.
Yeah.
You feel something and you feel a great tragedy, but there's also another level where there's no possible way you could understand what it actually feels like. And that's kind of a shitty thing, I think, for me to say. See, sometimes I can be a shitty person too.
Oh, here comes the sassy gay again. He's coming out.
It's like, I just don't think anyone else should be talking about. No, I do not think that at all. But I've always, and I struggle with feeling like, don't tell me that you feel the same way I do, because you don't.
Yeah. That's one of those weird things that people say to try and comfort you, but it's never comforting because you're like, well, what?
Never.
How do you know how I feel? What?
Right. I think something more comforting, and since this happened, I've started doing this when things happen to my friends, is not saying, I know what you're going through, but saying, I couldn't possibly understand what you're going through, but I am here for you.
Mm.
If you want to talk, if you want to trauma dump, if you just want to sit in silence, or if you need a long bear hug where we don't say a word, I'm here to do that for you. But I don't think I'll ever tell anyone ever again, I know what you're going through. Yeah.
Yes, wise words.
And then on top of that, I also feel like I can't fully own that tragedy. I wasn't there. I did know a few people that were involved with that. I knew a lot of people who escaped.
But can I just interrupt you quickly?
Go ahead.
So on one hand, you're saying that other people can't tell you how to grieve. But on the other hand, you're policing your own grief.
I am full of contradictions.
Have I read it correctly, though? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. Yeah. Long story short of all of this is I should probably actually be in therapy, but my insurance doesn't cover it.
Well, that's why I'm here. Ask you a bunch of intrusive questions and then be like, well, see ya. Sorry, I shouldn't joke about that. Sorry.
No, please do. If we didn't laugh about everything, we'd be crying. So, yeah, I sometimes police my own grief with it because I'm like, I don't get to grieve so hard about that. I wasn't there. All my close friends survived, but also people I knew didn't. The funny guy whose name I didn't really know that I had a locker across from working at Universal Orlando was there. And we both worked in the wizarding world, and I would see him all the time, even though we never interacted.
Mm.
Another friend, his best friend was there. All I can do is say, I'm so sorry he was there. In fact, I mainly didn't say anything except just say, hey, I love you. Just wanted to let you know that, because what do you say?
Yeah, yeah.
But I am very thankful that my little house of misfits somehow made it through. And we've survived to go on to different points in our lives. But that's one of those things where every year as we get further away, it doesn't hurt as much until you sit down and actually think about it or have a conversation about it like we're doing right now and realize that that pain does not go away. Like, it's still right in there, and it hurts just as much as it did when it first happened. It's just, I guess, I've gotten better at dealing with it.
So what do you think you lost on that night?
Oh, that's a hard question to answer. This might be a really dumb answer to that. And it's only because I don't have a better word for it. I feel like I lost some innocence that night.
Mm.
Maybe we were all just extremely naive, thinking that we would always have this place that could not be penetrated. Like, that was not a good enough reason to use the word penetrate, but...
I mean, you should try and weave it into every conversation, I think.
Every single one. So we really penetrated it deep. No, the innocence of thinking that we're always going to have somewhere safe that we can go. Mm. I don't believe that anymore. Like, there are places I can go that I feel good in and I feel like I can be myself in. But I have completely lost the belief that there's anywhere in this world where we're safe. And some places try and fix that. Like some of the bars in Orlando started making you walk through metal detectors and everything to get in there. But that whole security theater does nothing for me because I'm like, I've worked with metal detectors. They don't usually stop anything, honestly. But it's less about being worried about weapons being anywhere and feeling safe than just knowing that anywhere you go, every single person you talk to, there always could be someone who, as much as they're smiling to your face, could always be wishing you didn't exist. And it's kind of hard to live in that world. Yeah.
But so... I'm going to suggest that we focus on something positive to end our conversation, but I also recognize that you might not want to. So tell me to fuck off if you don't want to answer this question. When you think about Pulse, what did it teach you about yourself?
Well, fuck off.
No, oh, yeah. Tell me to fuck off again.
What did Pulse teach me about myself, or just teach me in general, so much. No, I think that, and this goes along with what I was just saying, that is really sad that I don't feel safe enough whenever you're talking to a random person. It also, and as I said, I'm full of contradictions. It taught me that even though you can be cautious with someone, you should also embrace the good in everyone. Like, give everyone the benefit of the doubt. I met all these random people that I never would have talked to before, but because we were in that one place at that one particular time, we got to know each other and got to the point where we could trust each other. And no amount of being scared or amount of caution you take with anyone can take that away from me, I think. Like, I'm willing to make friends with anyone I meet because I might make a new best friend. There's a little bit of good in everyone, you know?
Everyone?
Okay, no. Maybe not everyone, but there's a lot of good in most people.
And that's that on that. Thank you so much for continuing to listen to this show. I really appreciate that you turn up week after week. I wanted to say, if you have any memories of Pulse, if you have anything that you want to share about that space or about the things that you felt when you found out about the shooting, then please do get in touch and let me know. The easiest way to do that is through social media. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and my handle is LostSpacesPod. And if you want to reach out to JJ and talk to JJ or just follow them, why not find them on Instagram at JJIV_actor. You can also visit their website, which is JJIV.com. If you enjoyed this week's episode, maybe enjoyed isn't the right word. If you appreciated the conversation that we had, I would really appreciate if you subscribed, left a review on your podcast platform of choice, or just told other people that you think might be interested in listening and hearing these stories for themselves. My name's Kay Anderson, and you have been listening to Lost Spaces.